Though methylene blue has been around a long time, it's got a lot of history. It's making one hell of a comeback.
Oh yeah, starting to use it all over again. Dr. Spencer, tell me a little about the history of methylene blue. Like, how did people start using it as a health effect? Because originally started as a dye, right? So how were they using it originally?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of fascinating because it's fully synthetic. It was actually the first fully synthetic medicine in modern use, which is, it has a lot of firsts behind it, I noticed. It was one of the first antibiotics, long before penicillin. And it was also one of the first antipsychotics. But yeah, it started out as a chemical dye, which is why I wore my blue shirt today.
So clever.
It because it does stain organic like cotton wool cells this beautiful bright blue, which was quite vibrant in 1876, and it's technically it's a salt based, but it was really discovered, and it was getting on people's skin and who are making the fabric and staining the fabric, that when the early microscopes came out and they were looking at tissue, it was discovered that this was actually staining much deeper than just the surface. It was getting inside cells, and it was even staining differently organelles and like the Golgi apparatus and mitochondria.
Yeah,
And
highly
so forth.
absorbable.
Yeah, it was its penetration is makes it unusual. Its synthetic nature makes it very unusual. I think one of the most fantastic things it's still commonly used for is the reversal of acute cyanide poisoning and carbon
Yes.
monoxide. Those are thought to be irreversible.
Yeah.
And most people die if they don't get that treatment. So it's one of the most powerful I guess reversing agents in that regard. But it did make a leap from a chemical dye to use in pathology and fixturing slides to now the clinical application, which is where you and I really have gotten the most interested in it.
Oh yeah.
Do you use a lot of it in your practice, or how do you know when to use it or when not to use it? Or is that too soon of a question?
No, yeah. So we do use a lot of methylene blue in the clinic. Primarily, I'm looking at mitochondrial dysfunction for it. So when somebody's getting fatigue or especially brain fog, or even a lot of mental symptoms, we think that's low brain energy a lot of times. And so I'll look and see. Does methylene blue, I'll test methylene blue and see, does it help correct that pathway? So for us, we might do like an aerobic threshold test, and then I'll see how the neuromuscular system responds. I'll add a little methylene blue, and if it improves, then okay, this is going to be a good agent for them to improve mitochondrial health. And sometimes I will use it too to help support like low mood, low brain energy. A lot of my neurodegeneration cases, like Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's, I put them on methylene blue and they all do very, very well with it. And so we use it a lot, focused mostly on mitochondrial health. And that's how I'm looking at if they've got a mitochondrial issue, then also to protect and boost the brain.
So, all great reasons to use it. Let's talk about why and the how that works, because most people understand hemoglobin, this complex that's carrying around, oxygen and red blood cells and iron. And various toxins and chemicals can interfere with that problem just at the red cell. And then, kind of the mitochondrial effects we'll get to next. But when children are born, like my son who was born, he kind of had blue around his nose for a while because babies don't really have as high a percentage of hemoglobin. They have methemoglobin, which is kind of less functional, operates, I think, about 10% of the efficiency, whereas cyanide, carbon monoxide, totally shuts down the system. But essentially, methemoglobin or too much methemoglobin in the blood, methemoglobinemia tends to shift the ionic state of the iron from 2+ to 3+ or ferrous to ferric. Methylene blue reverses this. So that's like the exact mechanism of how it helps liberate energy and restore the mitochondria. And it's not a panacea. We'll get more towards the end about some of the cautions with it, some of the controversies, what we know it helps with, what we hope it helps with. But it's been really kind of a fascinating clinical discovery to watch so many sick people regain their quality of life, have these symptoms like fatigue and brain fog, memory, inflammatory problems. But the mitochondrial dysfunction, I think, is the most remarkable, like you said.
Makes the
And
biggest shift I see.
you probably use a lot in Lyme as well.
Yeah, well, being, so we could, you kind of touched on this a little bit earlier. It was used pretty heavily as an anti-malarial agent, which is a blood parasite. You hear about a lot in Africa, but it's very similar to Babesia, which is one of the co-infections for Lyme disease. And so it does function as an anti-Babesial agent. So it's good at helping the body to clear Babesia, but also, the different red blood cell infections, Babesia, Bartonella, Mycoplasma, they'll really decrease the oxygen carrying capacity of those hemoglobin, of those red blood cells. And so I like methylene blue because it's a twofer, right? So you get the anti-Babesial agent, that antimicrobial effect, and you're increasing the oxygen carrying capacity of that red blood cell. So a lot of times within a day or two, if you do like a loading dose, those people are immediately getting a benefit of more oxygen, less microbloated red blood cells. And so it's a great bump for people with Lyme disease on that front.
Yeah, I love how quickly it works. And you said twofer. I'm thinking, well, I can already think of a threefer and a fourfer, because it's got an antidepressant effect based on the enzyme activity at the monoamine
Well, speak a
recycling.
little bit on that, kind of being your forte. Speak a little bit on that, the antidepressive effects.
That kind of is one of the things that's the most remarkable is that of all the antidepressant treatments, whether those are SSRIs, SNRIs, DNRIs, TCAs, MAOIs, a lot of people have heard these classifications. All of them, we say, take 4 to 6 weeks to really start to see effect. What's unusual is how quickly this gets into the synapse. And you get a qualitative subjective effect. It kind of almost goes against everything that we know, because normally, like a Prozac molecule or something that's going to have to, get absorbed, move around the body, get to the right place, make it into the brain, march, down the axon until it get to the end of the cell. And that takes weeks. So this is like literally minutes to hours, and you're seeing a rapid antidepressant effect. So much so, I wrote a paper a long time ago on the ultra rapid treatment of depression, and I talked about things like ketamine and ECT and TMS and amphetamines. But other than that, it's almost an oxymoron. So to me, that's what's so exciting from a mental health perspective. That it's that powerful, but it's a double-edged sword. It does not play well if you are on antidepressants, which frequently a lot of my people are. So I don't get to use it a lot in mainstream psychiatry. Now, functional psychiatry are people that want nothing to do with the big pharma. It's great because it's very reliable, it's very well tolerated, it's got a little interesting dose curve, but I think that's the beginning of what it does in brain. Of course, it decreases inflammation. It seems to improve symptoms of bipolar, OCD, and most difficult psychosis.
Yeah,
which is even
that's
more
pretty
impressive.
impressive.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And I have used it clinically, and I have been able with a combination of other things, like, and we'll talk about the red light, but NAC, NAD, glycine, I have been able to get people off of antipsychotics, which is a pretty amazing thing, and
Yeah.
keep their symptoms at bay. Like, I kind of feel like that's uncharted territory
Yeah,
for this
that's not
community.
standard by any means.
Yeah. You know, I was surprised it's on the World Health Organization's list of essential medicines. And
It's
I
like
probably because of what you said about malaria, right? It interrupts the life cycle of the mosquito and can control malaria and treat malaria, treat viral illnesses, bacteria. It's particularly nasty on funguses.
yeah, very antifungal. Well, they use it in a lot of pools now, a lot of pools, hot tubs, kind of the backyard lakes and ponds. It's used quite heavily in there as both makes it look pretty, but also as a great antifungal, antimicrobial, keep the junk out.
Yeah, it interferes with fungal growth. So, like in aquariums or these closed water systems where they may have fish and they're giving birth to eggs, fungus is a problem because it will kill the eggs and kind of kill the whole ecosystem. And the very low amount of methylene blue, if it changes the color at all, is gonna give it a pretty blue hue anyway.
Yeah.
But it protects those eggs. It protects fungal overgrowth. And that's why it's used in aquariums still.
Yeah. That's pretty
Which.
it's neat to see something like this. It is so widespread. And especially, I always get pretty interested in the when something's used either agriculturally or in the animal world, just because they're going to be so on it to if something's killing off livestock or making a huge shift. They're going to pull back on it quickly, and whereas we don't do that so fast in the human realm. And so it's when it's so used widespread, it makes me feel a lot better about its background and its efficacy.
Not just widespread, but for 150 years.
Yes.
Matter of fact, the older our country gets, we're starting to see, like we talked about ozone and UVB and stuff like that. We're starting to see old treatments making a comeback because
Yeah.
as the treatments have gotten, I'm gonna put better in big air quotes, as the treatments have evolved, their side effects and the other problems and contraindications also have evolved. And then time goes on, and then all of a sudden, you know what? That methylene blue stuff was pretty darn good. I remember why we pulled the plug on it at the time, but why aren't we using it more now?
Yeah.
Especially because this is one that Western medicine recognizes its use in a
Yeah.
lot of ways, not just in the pathology, but like we talked about, the clinical applications. But like vitamin C, we've talked about vitamin C. One thing you gotta watch out for is G6PD deficiency. That's an enzyme. It doesn't really matter. It's glucose 6-phosphate dehydrogenase. But basically, this is a very common, and as a matter of fact, I think it's the most common enzyme deficiency in the world.
Yeah.
So, about 400 million people out there have that. What that essentially does is weaken the red blood cells' membrane integrity. So, it makes people more likely to have bleeding problems when exposed to things like high-dose vitamin C or methylene blue. So, that's a lab test that I always do before treatment with high-dose either vitamin C or methylene blue. Do you ever do that with the liquid? Or, I mean, the liquid's usually pretty 5 to 20 milligram doses or something.
Yeah, I'm not getting up to quite as high as you are, and I still have to, while it's rapidly absorbed through all the membranes, it still has a lot more metabolizing to go through, and we use the oral dosage, and so we rarely get up high enough to really push that too far.
Yeah. Same with C. I don't do G6PD unless I'm over 50.
Yeah.
Grams, cancer treatments, things like that.
Yeah.
But
Talk
it's.
about have you tried? So, we don't treat cancer at a clinic, but I have some patients who've used it in their cancer treatment, methylene blue, and with a red light. So let's kind of talk about maybe that, what that looks like with cancer, and then we can venture into red light a little bit. So do you, have you tried that with any of those cases yet?
What I like metaphors. I'm kind of an imagery guy. And what I explain to people is, you know, cells are the basic unit of life. They do all of the biochemical work, you know, that of all the processes in our body. So in order to power that cell, I think of it as a little vehicle, a little car, right? It has to have a power plant or a battery. I like the analogy of a battery better than a power plant, and I'll tell you why in a second. So the battery is kind of cool because it has, you know, a positive and a negative, right? And what's a positive and a negative? It's a gradient or a differential. If we were talking about, you know, work in a vertical sense, like climbing a mountain, it would be a height difference, right? In this case, it's a voltage gradient or a potential that is allowing electrons to flow downhill to release their energy, or in this case, move energy. Every cell is itself got action potential, as it's got, you know, a membrane potential of like 70 millivolts or something like that. And for cells to do what they do, they are electrical creatures. Well, the problem arises when the batteries get low for an infinite number of reasons. So the metaphor I like to use is methylene blue is kind of like you know, this solar panel that comes into the mitochondria, pops out its solar cells, and then it gets recharged with photonic energy, you know, either through from the sun, through your skin itself.
Right.
Particularly the red wavelength seems to give the most amount of energy, and really recharging the mitochondria at a cellular level.
Yeah.
So many of our interventions don't work at that deep of a level. And so
No.
it's really powerful for all kinds of, like we were talking about Lyme, but all kinds of chronically mitochondrial dysfunction states.
Yeah.
Because that's all these diseases and all these weird things we're talking about. It ultimately, the common denominator is the movement of energy.
For sure. The movement of electrons, movement of energy, can your cells produce enough? I mean, the reality of even something like long COVID a lot of times comes down to that. Can the cells produce enough energy on that front? So it's impressive what methylene blue and a little red light therapy can do together on that front.
Yeah, and we do combine them. When we do IV infusions frequently, it depends what we're doing it for and where we do the red light, but we have like a lumen photon towel, we'll just say.
Yeah.
It's pretty big. And it basically shines red light through the skin through the duration of the treatment.
Yeah.
Kind of energize it even more as it enters the body and finds its place in the cell and does what it does. But it's amazing how many different systems of the body it affects for being a synthetic chemical dye. And then learning about them was actually kind of amazing when we were doing the content for the show and actually writing them all down and explaining them. It's hard to compare it to anything else, except maybe vitamin C in terms of its ubiquitousness and in its application, in a way that people feel better. Because there
Yeah.
are a lot of supplements that might be making them better, but if they don't feel it, it's different. It's hard to get the mind over the matter.
Yeah, that's why I tell patients the first thing we're going to do is support you so you feel better and you're more functional. Then we'll deal with the underlying cause. But if you're not functional, it doesn't matter much, right? So we'll do that. And it, you know, the touching point there too with the red light is the way, now this is not medical advice because we don't treat cancer in our clinic, but it's informational, is that you can, you know, the tumor cells are going to be a lot stronger to suck these things up. So they'll absorb a lot more. And actually you can see these on dissections afterwards where the methylene blue is much more highly absorbed into some of the tumor cells. And then you can use focused red light. It'll create what they call a reactive oxygen species, but it'll increase the oxygen content inside that tumor cell and helps to destroy it from the inside out. So That's another way they use it a lot, more focused. So instead of the diffuse, because you're trying to stimulate all those mitochondria, use it much more focused over wherever that tumor site is for those folks with the methylene blue. It's a really neat application.
There's tons of applications. When I was mentioning when babies are first born, they have a higher percentage of methemoglobinemia. Yeah, they could do bilirubin lights and stuff like that. But methylene blue is used in blue, what they call blue baby syndrome. We've already talked about carbon monoxide, cyanide. It is a cellular contrast as for histological fixing of slides to really microscopically look at the differentiation of the cellular material. Like you said, on a macroscopic, you'll see it on the tissue, much like they use acetic acid or vinegar in a Pap smear to get, ascus or these atypical cells to light up differently. They turn white, whereas normal squamous epithelium stays normal. And methylene blue does the same thing, and they use it a lot in surgery to contrast, like you said, healthy tissue from unhealthy tissue. Because interestingly, dead cells or abnormal, unhealthy cells take up the dye, whereas healthy cells, they have enzymes that will actually process it or not allow it to stain the same way,
I kick it
which
back
is.
out. I even had some patients use it for kind of accidentally, but it worked out to use it to dye cavities. The
Yep,
dentist
it's
was like, well,
used
it's very easy to see because it's blue. Your cavities were blue. So.
it's used in dental. They use it, like we said, it has a MAOI effect in the brain, so you got to be really cautious with antidepressants. It acts as a calcium channel blocker on the heart, which is like, what? They use it for septic shock. They use it for anaphylaxis. It's well known and well established in malaria. I think the malaria treatments went back to the 1890s. They
Yeah,
were already figuring
long
out
time.
that it helped malaria. Symptomatically, one thing we run into a ton is brain fog and fatigue, memory issues, and inflammation, and the mitochondrial dysfunction. It even dissolves uric acid crystals and gout. I didn't know that. I ran across
That's a new one
that.
for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised about that too.
Yeah, the
Sometimes
standard,
they
yeah.
compound them with other photonic absorbers. Have you seen
Oh,
that?
okay. What's the ones I like to combine it with?
Gold.
Oh yeah, sure. Yep.
Yeah, Phytogold. But basically, for the chemists are like, yeah, we know what this stuff is because it's a very common redox reagent. So that's oxidation reduction that a lot of chemical reactions are manipulated through redox reactions. So if you ever seen Mr. Wizard, or I guess I'm dating myself, they're holding this Erlenmeyer flask of blue dye, and then all of a sudden it turns clear. And then they shake it, and then it turns back blue, and then it turns clear, and they just keep going round and round. You keep doing that because it's doing a redox reaction literally with oxygen in the flask.
Yeah.
So that really is the nuts and bolts about how it affects redox reactions in our body.
Yeah.
And it's smart. It's like a smart chemical.
Very much so. It's pretty impressive in that way of how it doesn't seem to do what it, as long as you're at the right dose, doesn't seem to affect what it needs to leave alone.
Yeah, and I mean, there's all kinds of industrial applications too. Like I was talking about, like shaking it. The dairy industry uses it because to test if dairy's good. If you drop methylene blue in dairy, it should remain blue. If it gets reacted with, we'll just say it turns clear. So they can drop it into milk, and if it doesn't, if it turns clear or disappears, odds are milk is on its way out, and you get a lot of things that it's reacting with, and then they're therefore changing the color back clear.
Yeah. That makes sense.
A lot of
How
people
much,
use it
what's
for
your standard
scaling.
patient you see? What's the, if give a profile of the typical patient you would use this with?
In my practice, it would probably be someone with chronic mold,
Yeah.
chronic Lyme, chronic fatigue of unknown origin. I think fibromyalgia, because we don't know what that is, and it's so many different things that often can help fibromyalgia. Cancers, adrenal failure. Anytime someone is so unusually fatigued, the mitochondria kind of have a safe mode where they just like your car can go into a safe mode. They operate about 10%, which is enough to keep you alive and keep the plumbing moving, but that's about it. You
Yeah.
know, or safe mode on your computer. Very little you can do. So someone who's clinically functioning at that level, and they've seen every doctor, and every doctor can't find what's wrong with them, or can find them and tell them that they can't do anything about it, or cancer patients that have given up on the Western approach, or they've fought chemo and radiation so long they don't want to do it anymore. They want to focus either on naturopathic or palliative.
Yeah.
Those are the big ones. Now, I also use a lot of, I'm talking more IV right now.
Right.
I use a lot of the liquid for neuropsychiatric syndromes because it's so effective, profound, and safe when used correctly.
Yeah,
So
I've seen it work really well on that front. That's incredible.
yeah, I mean it's usually in there with psychotic illnesses, or really neurovegetative depression or something like that, where there's this drained, almost like cancer fatigue. EBV is another one that's very exhausting, that it's hard to dig yourself out of that hole. That can buy you time and get it going pretty quick.
It does have an antiviral component, which helps.
Yeah, long hauler.
Yeah.
I've been getting good results with that. But you know, essentially what it's doing is helping the mitochondria absorb and transport oxygen via this electron transport chain, which what that effectively is going back to the battery analogy, when you hook a battery charger to a battery, you're flowing electrons to store current, right?
Yeah.
We're doing the same exact thing in the cell. We're passing these electrons to create electrochemical gradient to facilitate the transport of oxygen, which is on a fundamental level, like one of our deepest endocrine processes. I mean, that's why cyanide kills so fast.
Sucks it
It
all
just
up.
shuts it down. You suffocate from the inside out.
Well, that's
Not
exciting.
if you have
We've been
mentally
so
fluid.
excited when we added it to the clinic and seeing there's, especially with some of the cases you're talking about, especially the flat out chronic fatigue cases and who are just, not really depressed. I mean, maybe depressed because you're so exhausted, but they can't push through the fatigue at all. That's been our biggie. But yeah, it's been such a game changer across the board, like you're talking about.
It's definitely made a big comeback. The pills are still a little bit hard to find. They need to be made by a compound pharmacy. Can you
Yeah.
find pills online? Yes. But if they're selling them to you, they're not USP or pharmaceutical grade. And that is really important because this is one of the products that, due to its manufacturing processes, you could let end up with a lot of undesirable chemicals in there, heavy metals and other things like that. So really always want USP grade. There is USP grade online as a liquid, But the pills and certainly the IV, which is FDA approved, by the way, are prescription only.
Got to make sure you go through the right channels.
What do you think you've seen the most robust response or effect in its application? Like, where do you the most confident, oh, hey, this is a line person, I'm gonna make them a whole lot more functional and happy with methylene blue versus, like you said, a heavy metal or a dysbiosis situation or.
The two biggest things I've seen to give the biggest boost is if somebody has a red blood cell infection, they've got some fatigue, maybe some, a lot of times the RBC infections do create a lot of neuropsych symptoms. They've got maybe some mild neuropsych symptoms and a lot of shortness of breath. That clinical picture it works really well on, especially it gets a quick boost, but over time, as it builds up and has that continuous oxygenation effect, that's a continual improvement. And then just that flat out fatigue. I've had some cases where I couldn't bust the fatigue. Like they would probably tell you my energy level is anywhere between a 0 and a 2 out of 10. And I've seen it bump that energy level up to 5, 6, 7 out of 10 within a month, which is a huge improvement for them, especially a couple of my cases who have been chronic for a while and we were fighting that. And it gives that relief all of a sudden. That's a life changer right there. If you can go from a 2 out of 10 energy level to 5, 6, 7, suddenly you're functioning, you're engaged, et cetera. So those that flat out fatigue and that kind of limey shortness of breath, neuropsych, moderate fatigue case.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I see them too. I think of it the most in more bread and butter, depression, anxiety, mood, psychosis. But I just don't get to use it as much because by the time people come see me, they're on all these pharmaceuticals and the contraindications prevent the use unless you can wean off, which I do try to do as much as possible because a lot of people are on medications unnecessarily, or worse, they're
Agreed.
just making them worse and not helping.
Sometimes it's a while
But
to figure that out too.
wouldn't you say it's pretty dose dependent? I've been surprised. Like some people will take one drop of 1% and they will feel it like within 10 to 120 minutes, they will know that they have taken something and feel an effect. Whereas I've had other people, you might go 50 IV, 50, 100, maybe even 200 milligrams, and they're feeling nothing. So now you're adding red light and NAD and NAC and maybe even glycine if it's a Parkinson's or something like that.
No, agreed. It's definitely dose dependent, and you can, what's nice is, you can always start small and work up. And sometimes what I'll tell patients is, let's start low, work you up, and when we get to the point where you like the effects are kind of where we want it to be, then we'll stick to that dose.
Yeah, that's sort of what I've been doing. And I think 'cause there's a lot of, I don't want to say miss information. There's just a lot of no information and unfamiliarity with people that I tell people to start with one drop in the morning because it does help with, it's almost a nootropic too. It helps with mental resiliency and memory and focus and all of that. I sometimes do use it as a ADHD-like medicine because you can take it as needed. But I tell them to start with one drop in the morning, the next day two, the next day three. If they're really skittish, nervous, or there's a drug interaction I want to keep a close eyeball on. And then try to get them on average to like a 10 milligram dose, which is about 20 drops in most of those formulations. That can, like you said, help you find your target dose, make sure they're not, I don't know, they don't want some freaky sensitivity or reaction, allergic reaction to the dye or something like that. And that way, if I want to do IV, they've already had experience with it, and I don't need to worry about as much about an anaphylactic reaction or allergic.
Not as much potential fallout.
Yeah. There's two hot areas that I was going to ask you what you knew about Alzheimer's, and I'll think of the other thing. But there's been sort of mixed data on that. I think it's so people want to fix Alzheimer's so bad that anything that might look like positive data, we jump on that band camp. But I found a lot of mixed data on Alzheimer's.
Yeah, it's, we could probably do an episode on Alzheimer's, but, Alzheimer's, kind of what we do know clinically, we've gotten away from the plaquing idea. Like, research has basically shown that's really probably not it. It's more of a lack of brain energy, which is we think, okay, methylene blue would be helpful, but really it's an insulin resistance almost in the brain where the cells can't uptake glucose very well. So anything you can do to potentially improve neuronal energy, brain energy is probably going to be helpful. And so methylene blue is neuroprotective. It's, we just talked tons about how much it's going to increase the energy in the brain. And so probably for certain folks, it's going to help. And if those folks have, protozoa or Babesia, which some of them do in research show in the brain, well, then of course, methylene blue is going to help there too, because it's going to cross that blood-brain barrier quite rapidly. But I think as a general idea, it's not hitting all the quite the right mechanisms that we would need to see to really give total relief to Alzheimer's. It's kind of, it's beating around the bush a little bit. Methylene blue's hitting some of the right switches, but not the total enough to really flip it the way we'd want to.
Yeah, I guess the way I conceptualize it is Alzheimer's almost you could consider as an end stage illness, certainly end organ damage. So it's like, a healthy liver that gets insulted with Tylenol or alcohol or whatever and kills off part of it just regenerates. It does just fine. But you take a liver that's chronically inflamed, maybe infected with Hep C, maybe the person's drinking and it's got decades of chronic insult and inflammation, and then now fibrosis and or cirrhosis. Maybe the ounce of prevention would have been the better route to take. So I think of Alzheimer's as by the time the plaques show up and there are fibrillary tangles and all that crap. It's not like, well, hey, let's take some methylene blue and literally reverse 40 or a lifetime of damage. So I think it's in like early Alzheimer's, it's great because you might be able to reverse, which by definition is not dementia, right? If you're reversing some of it. But as a late stage thing, I think it's probably showing little to no effect. And in some of the studies, that's what they found. Lyme was the other one I wanted to ask you about because Lyme had mixed results too. And I'm wondering if it's a similar type of phenomenon, like acute Lyme, it would work much better than someone who's got chronic Lyme and all the complex sequela from long term.
My, so we obviously we do a lot of Lyme in the clinic, and so Lyme itself being the Borrelia, the spirochete, it's somewhat effective against that, but very mildly. It's much better against the protozoans, right? So the Babesia, malaria, those type of parasites. And so if they don't have that as part of their clinical infection picture, it's going to be helpful to some degree for the mitochondria and all the things we talked about. But if it's not hitting that exactly right, it's not going to have a huge boost. And so any good medicine, as you and I both know, always is deal with the picture in front of you, right? So we can't just say every Lyme case does great with methylene blue. Every this case, we say, well, what's your symptom pick? What's your clinical picture? So if you have Lyme disease but no Babesia and no protozoan infection, well, your mitochondria are decent. Methylene blue might not give you a big bump. It might help a little because of all these other things we're talking about, but it's probably not going to be a big bump. You've got Babesia, you've got protozoans, you've got major red blood cell infections. Well, then, yeah, you're going to feel great. And as a clinician, we might say, oh, this is great for Lyme, but not really. It's great for the co-infections. And so that's been my experience with it, anyways, on Lyme patients.
Yeah, so I mean, we've been talking a lot about the clinical applications. Of course, it started out as a synthetic dye. In the middle, some of the histopathology, there's a ton there that we didn't even cover. I was shocked to learn. I didn't know, and they use it a lot for dissecting planes of tissue in real time during surgery, finding pilonidal cysts or fistulas, opening. It's great for UTIs too, by the way, because it gets concentrated in the urine. And they use it for like sentinel node biopsy. You inject that in the, and it's going to come in the lymph. And
But you
if
can
there's
even use it to
any,
stain parasites in the stool. The parasites will suck it up and you'll see them in the stool a little easier.
So that's terrific, both in, post-mortem, but also like during tough surgeries, right? That can make the difference between life and death. If you can find a tumor in a lymph node that you would have otherwise missed without that macroscopic contrast, that can be the difference between life and death. And it is used all the time that way. So that was pretty cool. The
It's pretty impressive the diversity, and it is the cool part, and kind of you touched on this, is that it is, at least in certain applications, accepted into mainstream medicine. So it's not, sometimes you and I hit the fringe a bit, but it's not woo-woo, right? It's we can we
Yeah.
studied it. It's been applied for hundreds of years, or at least 150-ish. And so we know what it can do, what it's capable of. It's medically sound. It's a great remedy.
Soldiers used it during, I think, World War II, before the mass production of penicillin, as an antibiotic, as an effective antibiotic. And they had like jokes about it making their pee blue and all of this. So it's been around. It's just making a big comeback. And so a lot of our viewers, I'm sure, have run across it or would be interested in it. So this is like an awesome topic. I would love to give an update or a part two on this at some point down the road to see more about specifically clinical benefits. And maybe even getting some anecdotes of our
I'll say a couple of
patients.
case reviews would be awesome.
Yeah, because that's what makes, I guess, my job really exciting is helping people in that way, in a really measurable way, where they can say, this is what it was like, this happened, and this is what it's like now. Because so often it's a slow, gradual process and multiple variables. This is one of the more striking treatments. And although there are some safety considerations that we mentioned, the risk-reward ratio is really in favor
Huge.
of using it and understanding it when it's appropriate. So thank you for your knowledge and wisdom, as usual.
Yeah, it's always fun to chat about this stuff when we're using it, especially we're each using it together in a clinic and we can talk about different ways we're seeing it and how it's functioning. It's a blast.
Well, let's do this again.
All right.
I appreciate your time as always, and until next time,
Till next time.
be well.